Good evening. Welcome to the Slayer Report. Today is March 5th, 2015. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. If you're east of the Mississippi, then you may be in as iced in and snowed in as we are in western Tennessee. It feels lovely. It's quite cold. It also feels like the entire economy is shut down for snow days over the last 2 weeks. I can't complain. Boston is headed for an all-time record snowfall, and people are talking about the snow going above their roof. Can you imagine that? Coming up, events, 2 hours on Coast to Coast next Wednesday, March 11th, from 10 p.m. Pacific to midnight Pacific. And we'll be talking sort of about what's ahead and a lot of the information that was in the annual wrap-up. April 25th, we're rescheduling Richard Dolan in New York. That's a Saturday. We'll go for longer than lunch, so we have plenty of time to talk with Richard. Invitations will go out to subscribers in the New York area. If you're not in the New York area and interested, please let customer service know so we can send you an invitation. Our theme tonight is the real deal on kickstarting the housing market. I have a commentary up this week about it. I'm trying to connect the dots and see the patterns. There's a lot of reason for investors to believe that home builders are scheduled for a reasonably good housing market year. And the question is, well, how's that going to happen? Usually for the housing market to revive, you need first-time home buyers moving in and buying in significant amounts. But let's look at some of the dots that I talk about in the commentary. We did a great Slayer report last year with Zach Taylor about the extraordinary number of immigrants who are streaming in, big squabbles about immigrants, particularly in the border states. A new article, can't say that it's verified, talking about the efforts to really move immigrants into designated cities around the country where they will receive government support. The article indicated that the numbers are quite staggering. Now, if this happens in combination with the different policies that the administration is trying to do without congressional support by various presidential rulings, you're beginning to see a pattern of creating for what probably will be voters in the 2016 election. It certainly looks that way. But in addition, we have extraordinary increases in the HUD budget. And if you dig in and look at it, as I have, it looks to me like lots of resources that could be used to accomplish significant first-time home buying and different housing subsidies to the immigrant population. And in addition, FHA is lowering its mortgage insurance premium by a third. That is a big drop. At the same time, Freddie and Fannie are lowering their down payment requirements by from 5 to 3%. That combination is really an interesting one. So as we're coming into the presidential election, you really want to see what's going on with this kind of subsidy kickstarting both loyal new Democrats in the immigrant population as well as buying a lot of favor with the home building networks, not just the home builders, but the realtors, the mortgage bankers, et cetera. It's interesting because if we do have Clinton and Bush's running in the 2016 campaign, these are folks who have played juice the mortgage market for decades. And so it'll be interesting to see what the Republicans do on the HUD budget. There is a lot of bipartisan support for juicing the housing market. And I'm sure that whatever's up with the immigrant population, it's part of the build-out of the investment networks into Mexico and Latin America. So this is probably part of a much bigger North American behind-the-scenes deal. Anyway, let's keep an eye out. I really keep beating this drum with you because I want to make sure if you lost your home to foreclosure or a big investor or a bank made money picking it up for cheap, you just need to prepare yourself for the possibility that we're going to see a flood of new housing subsidies that may be showered on people around you, including newcomers. And so if you lost your home and didn't see the game, hopefully we can help you see the game this time, and hopefully you get ahead of it. Take a look at that commentary. There's some interesting links with it. I do think that we're watching a consistent problem, and we'll see this in the housing situation this year. The game is moving faster than the leadership expects. If you look at the soft revolution tactics they've been using, they have a consequence to them, and that is that everyone else can figure out how it works and start to use it as well. And it's interesting to see how this game could play out, because it was the Clinton administration and their team that engineered the start of the mother of all housing bubbles. And a lot of people got hurt in that, and a lot of people have deep memories of that. So this kind of situation could have a lot of blowback, and that blowback could have unanticipated consequences. I'm reminded of Bill Moyer once saying, "Once we decide that anything goes, then anything goes can come home to haunt us." So let's see what happens. Money and markets. I'm not going to cover the markets. I did in the first quarter equity overview, our interview. So if you want an update on the markets, listen to that. The big story, and played down in the press, it was interesting, is the Federal Reserve in Washington, that's the Board of Governors, is shifting regulatory power of the big New York banks away from the New York Fed. This is very, very big. This is an enormous shift in governance and authorities and powers. And I can't stress it enough. The Yellen is clearly concerned about congressional pressure and trying to protect the Fed powers by sort of shifting it out of the New York Fed. Presumably, if she pulls it back into the center, she can protect it more, is I think the theory. But and certainly the New York Fed is still the depository for the U.S. government and agent on the Exchange Stabilization Fund. So among that and its other powers, they still have extraordinary powers. But if this doesn't go smoothly, if the relationship between the New York Fed, the member banks, and the Board of Governors gets rocky, it could be, things could get quite interesting, even dangerous. I have a commentary up called Take That Boner. As we know, the Israeli Prime Minister was invited by Boner to come give a speech in Congress. I would say that it was a real low point in the history of this country. But interestingly enough, the Gallup polls show that from the time that Netanyahu arrived in the U.S., Obama's approval rating has increased by 5 points in the Gallup poll. You know, you have to work hard these days to increase Obama's approval rating, and you know, by 5 points that quickly. In fact, an NBC News Wall Street Journal poll found that a margin of 48% to 30% registered voters said that Boner should have talked to the president before inviting the Israeli prime minister to address Congress. I watched the beginning of the speech, and I sort of felt like Congress had a for sale sign on it and was broadcasting it to the rest of the world. And so it was a very embarrassing and deeply disturbing situation when one side of the House invites a foreign prime minister to address Congress without the permission and support of the president, and that prime minister then proceeds to lobby the Congress against the president's diplomatic efforts. It's an extraordinary sign of weakness on the part of the American government. And I just think it's very hard to run a global reserve currency when you have behavior like that going on, and it's a huge embarrassment. Interestingly enough, Foreign Affairs Tonight then publishes its lead article called The Breakup, subtitled The Slow Demise of U.S. Bipartisan Support for Israel. So this was not Israel's strongest moment. Watch the ECB. One of the most important stories this week is we have been steadily moving to negative interest rates in the ECB, and that has inspired an incredible, what Bloomberg referred to as a bond blitz, as European and American corporations go into the market and get as much free cash as they possibly can. We have GDF, the French utility, raising a major offering this week. And next week, Berkshire Hathaway is going in for its first Eurobond offering, raising 3 billion euro. That's about 3.4 billion US. It's quite extraordinary. The French utility bonds went at no interest rate. So in essence, people are lining up what is the equivalent of an annuity coming from a French utility. But that is extraordinary. We have reports, offerings by sovereign governments around Europe that are selling bonds at negative interest rates. And then one commentator last week pointed out that the Swiss yield curve, you had to go out to 20 years to get a positive interest rate. The ECB is scheduled to spell out details very shortly on how they're going to buy major $60 billion a month in corporate and government bonds. Last week, I was working with a representative of a major financial institution, and at one point asked to see all the tax of the corporate bonds they had in inventory. And it was shocking. They pulled up the inventory. There was almost nothing. There was certainly nothing, no credits that I would ever touch with a 10-foot pole. And we finally had to go to find something. We had to go to taxable municipals. And to me, it's a sign of not only an extraordinary excess of cash, but very powerful deflationary forces at work. One of the beneficiaries of all of this, of course, is the equity markets for the strong European economies in the north. Germany, the German stock market is clearly the beneficiary. Put up a little commentary called 10 years in the European Union, Germany is the winner. You might want to take a look at the numbers. I doubt it's far from over. Well, 2 weeks of hack attacks at Solaria. We have lots of tigers on our tail. And thank you for some of the suggestions and ideas that you sent. Sunday and Monday, 2 weeks ago, we were under constant attack and we're out for 2 days. We've never normally, we come back much faster, but it was pretty ugly. And then we had two short outages this week, but came back very quickly. What is it? I can only guess, but I will give you some of my guesses. 2 weeks ago, we did a story about ISIS and reporters under attack and several dead who could, who had experience with in Iraq and with being a hostage and very knowledgeable. And it looked to us like there was a real effort to frighten the press corps into not messing with the ISIS story, which, of course, got more and more ridiculous. Interestingly enough, over the last 2 weeks, we've seen a lot of reports that ISIS is finally getting the job done that was started right after 9/11 with the idea of 7 countries in 5 years. They seem to be destroying antiquities and relics, rounding up the oil fields. There was a piece I put up on Top Picks with a map that showed sort of what the plan was at with the 7 countries in 5 years. And they're doing a very good job of divide and conquering the Muslim population. So if you look at the initial goals of our foray into the Middle East, ISIS seems to be getting the job done. Anyway, but I think the pushback on pushing around the reporters, even possibly several dead as a result of this, was much greater than expected. And sure enough, suddenly this week, ISIS is now, the whole story is mostly page 8. There's executive turnover at one of the major media entities that I mentioned, and an amazing amount of quietude about the whole thing. And it looks to me like the aggressive promotion of stories and treatment of reporters who could question those stories, all of that has backed off enormously. It wouldn't surprise me if Peggy Noonan's editorial contributed to that. But once again, it's a sign that the 90s game is not working. More people are connecting the dots. About 5 years ago, somebody asked me what I thought the financial consequence to me of telling the truth on the Solaria report was, and I told them that I thought it cost me about $100,000 a year, and they were completely shocked. And I sat down with our budget, and I said, no, here's what it costs on the systems, here's what it costs on personnel, here's what it costs in terms of our time, here are all these different issues that we have to do. Here's the extraordinary care we take with regulation and compliance and all these other things. And finally, I remember he was quite struck, and I told him something that is true to this day is this story. Whenever I get into something particularly controversial on the Solari report, I ask myself, is this story worth $5,000? Because that's what I figure it's going to take us in terms of time and costs to deal with sort of the various attacks that come in. And it was funny, before I went into the reporter desks and the banker desks 2 weeks ago, I said to myself, is this story worth $5,000? But I have to confess that I thought as long as it was subscriber only, we would fly under the radar. The fact that we didn't tells me the system is fragile. The good news for me is that it helped inspire our team to move much closer to launching our new blog. I just love it, and I can't wait for you to see it. It's got much improved security. We're going to have to move into the cloud. But we'll have plenty of backups, and so this should significantly increase capacity and security. And I think I'm hoping you love the blog, the new one, as much as I do. And so I do apologize for the inconvenience that any of you may have experienced as a result of our outages, but I believe it does reflect that you're getting very quality information and analysis here at the Solari Report. I should also mention, I don't think the problem is the government whatsoever. I think it's competition between the corporate media and the private investment syndicates that play with them, and the internet media that's speeding up network intelligence. So I think this is economic warfare, and it's the kind of battles that go on in the marketplace in a digital age. And unfortunately, it's a business expense in the digital age. The more successful you are, the more it costs you. If you're not spending on ads with the corporate media, they'll simply extract it from your finances with hack attacks. I wanted to let you know the Breakthrough Energy Solari report we did with Joel Garbon is now available public. We got lots of requests, including from the Global BEM Group, who I always like to support. So we agreed we would make that public. And so I would encourage you to let your friends and families do that. But of course, I always encourage you to share the Solari report material with your friends and family. Interestingly enough, one of the people who was working with me on looking at breakthrough energy technology, both with respect to that interview and some of the other things I'm doing, commented to me that after going through the experience 2 weeks ago, that he was thinking, you know, I thought this was all 10 years off. But in fact, if you look at what's happening with all sorts of different technology and innovation, it's really coming. It's now, it's 5 years. And I agree, the speed of innovation is definitely speeding up. So it's one of the things I talked about in global valuations. And it's a reason to keep a close eye on the market, because the market signals when it's happening. Our hero this week is Rainer Voss, who was the extraordinary retired German investment banker who gave the interview for our movie this week in Let's Go to the Movie. It's an excellent German documentary, Der Banker, Master of the Universe. And it's essentially a very long, fascinating interview with Voss, who basically says that there is now enough money on the planet, and this is what comes from very loose monetary policy, so that it can sort of aggregate and break up countries. It can attack countries. Think of it, you know, all those euros or dollars as a swarm of bees, you know, that are attacking the prey, if you will. And he basically says that money busted Greece, busted Spain, and soon, he says, France is next. It's a very compelling interview. And one of the things he does is he gives a very good description of how the system manages to get very intelligent, capable people to get together and behave in this way, and literally sort of destroy whole economies behaving this way. Okay, tons of questions in Ask Catherine. Let me just dive in. I have assets of approximately X dollars in my brokerage account. About 3 weeks ago, I became very uncomfortable with the markets and required that my broker sell all of my equities. The only equity I retained was Apple. I address this question in portfolio strategy as part of the first equity overview tonight, so I won't repeat that information here. But again, a lot of what you need is very specific to your unique situation, which I don't know or understand. But check out the portfolio strategy section of the first quarter equity overview tonight, because I was hoping that that would really address it and give me more questions if that doesn't. A second question. Hello, I'm currently living in Europe and have some savings in euros. I have the opportunity to transfer a large amount of my savings to Australian dollars. I'm wondering what you would recommend as general advice in regards to future security of the euro and Australian dollar. And since we are getting no interest on our savings here, and we would at least get a few percent in Australia, any basic information or tips would be greatly appreciated. I hate to take currency risk. It's not something I love to do. So the thing that concerns me about what you said was, you said a large amount. I don't like a large amount of your savings in anything, let alone in a currency different than the one your expenses are coming in. So if you want to take currency risk, why not a basket of currencies, not just one? If you don't want to keep your savings in euro, another thing to think about is real things, you know, income producing stocks, income producing real estate or other income assets. So I would be very careful, because I've seen enormous swings between two currencies that can literally cut savings or income flow in half. So I would just be very careful to take a lot of currency risk and to put all your eggs in one basket. Dear Catherine, in last night's report, the way you evoked Joel to explain and clarify terms and Pratt and issues, referring to the Joel Garbon interview with on Breakthrough Energy, to explain and clarify terms and processes that I've puzzled over a long time was truly incredible. Thank you. One point of particular significance to me had to do with the issue of investing in the traditional sources of alternate energy, i.e. solar and wind, something that the folks with whom I rub elbows are discussing as they divest from fossil fuels. The follow-up question is, of course, where to invest those funds. As you and Joel spoke, the image of an iceberg came to me. My understanding is that in an iceberg, only less than one-third of the mass is seen above water. The mass of two-thirds underwater infrastructure is not visible to us. As you spoke, I realized that although solar and wind are less destructive than the extractive sources of energy, they are actually accessing the same source of energy. So to return to my metaphor, investing in solar and wind can only impact energy use on the tip of the iceberg. They cannot sustain the massive interconnected systems, economic, currency, political, military, that have been built around the extraction of fossil fuels, the underwater infrastructure of the iceberg, nor can they generate adequate finances to sustain the transition out of fossil fuels. The only solution is to access and move to a totally different source of energy. That's why learning about Breakthrough Energy is so important. I know that you only give specific investment advice to your clients after exploring each one's individual financial situation thoroughly, but it's not investment advice per se that I'm seeking. Rather, what I would love to know is, are there any areas in Breakthrough Energy development that folks could investigate as potential places to redirect the investments they are withdrawing from fossil fuels? I'd love to be able to insert those ideas into the conversations whirling around me. What you see these days that I know of are private equity deals related to this kind of thing, but nothing that I know of that's publicly traded, other than one or two of the big defense contractors who are known to be working on this, but it's theoretically it's a smaller part of their portfolio. What I will say is there's one great charitable investment, and I think Joel's project to create standards for testing and verification could make an enormous difference and, in fact, help create a flow of opportunities presenting themselves, particularly if they could be combined with crowdfunding. So for anybody who's got the wherewithal to do charitable investment, I think it's one that could make an enormous difference to the world. And you can Learn more about it by contacting Joel at New Energy Movement. Dear Catherine, I'm struggling to understand fully the fairly recent onslaught of propaganda about bullying. It is being presented as an epidemic and is blamed for suicide violence, etc. I'm noticing now the term bullying remains vague, but the suggested answer is always the same. Tell someone with authority, that is, tell the school or some authority figure. When I was a child, my grandfather's advice was to punch the bully in the nose, which worked well at the time. It seems to me there is an angle here I'm not seeing. I do see the increase in bullying-like behavior from regulators and the government. The bullying in Washington state over our vaccines is heating up. What I don't see is any real advice for people to deal with bullies. I know you have faced more than your share of bullying. Any thoughts? Matt from Seattle. I haven't seen what you're referring to, so if you have any articles or specifics, feel free to send. What does seem to be happening, though, in cases where you're seeing bullying, I think the ISIS and reporter story was one, is wherever there's illumination of how the real game works, it seems to back things up and shift them, particularly if you can illuminate how the money works. Usually in those kinds of situations, the bully is really a puppet, and you need to illuminate the people pulling the bully strings and how they profit. A beautiful example of major bullying is watch the documentary on the Dixie Chicks, Long Way Around. You really see when the military-industrial machine wants to turn it on and scare people to death, it's amazing to watch. And the Long Way Around documentary really shows you a perfect example of that. The problem with bullying related to public policy issues is you've got an extraordinary machinery, billions if not trillions, vested in making something go a particular way. So they really work at just wearing down over very long periods of time. But that can backfire. It backfired on homeschooling. It backfired recently on gun ownership. And that's where constant education seems to work, particularly when it touches on children we love, our responsibility as parents. But in any big public policy issue, you need a majority backfiring. Now, if you look at the simmering that's going on in the population, there's just real serious disgust on the part of the kind of people who know how to get things done. So it's going to be interesting to see how that comes, but I think this, I keep talking about the soft revolution, it has blowback. I think it's happening more and more because people do see the game and they're connecting the dots. And once they decide that the system isn't credible, the speed at which they can get intelligent about that could be quite remarkable. Catherine, I recently switched to StartMail because of your interview with Dr. Catherine Albrecht. She convinced me of the importance of encrypting email because nothing is free. Now, however, I'm seeing articles about NAS spy programs on hard drives, and it has me concerned. Also, I'm familiar with keylogger programs that can do equal damage by recording your passwords, passphrases, and sending them out to whomever without your knowledge. My question is, can someone on your team recommend a utility, preferably free, to reliably detect and clean all spy programs off computers? Oh, wouldn't that be wonderful? I will check with Dr. Albrecht and see if she has any recommendations. Or can Catherine follow up with Dr. Albrecht in the future, because this topic may cover a host of operating systems and hardware? I would love to get some systems people who I could have on the Solaria Report who could address that. So please feel free to send recommendations. Being in IT for many years, I can tell you that computer security is a difficult and encompassing field. No kidding. I couldn't agree more. Many IT professionals know the adage that a computer network is only secure as its weakest link. Couldn't agree more. Which means you must spend a lot of resources to keep networks secure and robust from intruders, even disgruntled internal folks, apparently. I can do research and hopefully find some good things on my own, but I'm asking Solaria because maybe you or StartMail already has a solution. I just started to use StartMail. We're going to prototype it. Or we're going to sort of experiment with it and see if we can move more of our operations to it. Then a great product suggestion on some of the challenges we've been having and the advantages of doing mirrors, which I really appreciate. Anyway, I would say this. I don't think there's any such thing as protection against the government. Ultimately, I think the government can get in and see anything. And if they can't do it by the various tactics described here, they can certainly do it through the court. So I don't think there is any privacy from the government. What I'm really concerned about, and what things like Start Mail can do for me, is it can really increase the cost of competitors trying to steal all of our stuff, at least before their market research firms hear it on the Solari report. So this is really an issue of trying to protect things from corporate competitors, at least for a longer period of time, or make it more expensive for them to get it. So I'm not particularly concerned about the government, but my concern is sort of economic warfare in the marketplace. And you should be concerned about that too, because there are lots of people taking advantage of your money and taking advantage of you as a consumer by getting intelligence on you that should be private. Dear Catherine, this is old news, but do you have any responses to it, already written, recorded? If not, what's your take? She asks me about a group at conservation.org. I don't know them. I'm sorry, I haven't. Have you seen the videos? Which ones do you, are you referring to videos on their site? Anyway, if there's one you specifically want me to watch, let me know what it is. But I don't know much about them. Catherine just signed up for your newsletter and just received the annual report. Very classy production. A question about chemtrails. We live in western Colorado, almost to the Utah border. When we moved here 8 years ago, there was almost no chemtrails. Now it's almost a daily whiteout. It's so bad that our solar panel generation is almost cut in half. Our eyes burn and we get headaches, and they combine chemtrails with HARP, and we can tell because there is not a bird to be seen, and there are lots of birds around here. We also subscribe to Jim Willey, and he says soon to start our invisible chemtrails. Is this all we have to look forward to in the rest of our lives, as a rogue government that's trying to kill us? I'm 67 and have worked hard all my life and was hoping to enjoy a little of life. It would appear that these people, whoever they are dead set on removing as many of us as possible, one way or the other. Rick. Hey, Rick, I'm not sure that depopulation is the primary goal. If you haven't listened to Clifford Carnicom's special, we did a two-hour special with him in the archives. I would strongly recommend he goes through all the possible exclamations. I've found chemtrails to be pretty much around the world, but there are some islands where you have strong trade winds where they don't seem to bother to spray. And so you might want to check out some of those places. If you're not willing to move, you may be willing to take a break and get away from them for a while. Dear Catherine and Solari, I was delighted to hear you'll be addressing the first quarter report, best options of where and what to invest proceeds in from the sale of real estate. I'm in a similar situation as the person who wrote in. I, too, am not sure what to do with proceeds, approximately dollars X. My thoughts have been to reinvest in a small multifamily apartment building or invest in the equities market. I am a global 3.0 city, but still concerned about the future of the economy. Something was said that caught my attention in your interview with Mr. Garvin, something about HUD subsidies to support and encourage immigrants to buy houses. Maybe I should be buying low-cost single-family homes that need some updating to prepare for this program. I'm interested in hearing more about the program or being directed to where I can learn more about it, if there's any information. If you're going to do real estate, whether multifamily, single family, you need to make sure you have the temperament to manage it. Real estate's the kind of things where, you know, there's 1,000 things you have to get right. If you get one thing wrong, you could lose a lot. So you really have to have the temperament for it and take the time to really be good at it. Please stay away from HUD subsidies. You do not want to be involved in government programs. You want something that can make money in the market on the merits. You are in an area where real estate, I think, will do relatively well, as long as you know what you're doing or take the time to learn what you're doing and approach it right. Again, if you listen to what I discussed in portfolio strategy, which I think could help you in the first quarter equity overview, you don't want all your money in one place, so please don't plop it into one building, just like I wouldn't have you plop it into one stock. So you do want some liquid and some in real things, and so try and get that balance. And thank you, Catherine, you're a guiding light. Appreciate your hunger for the truth. Keep on keeping on. By the way, do you have a minimum net worth required to hire you as a financial consultant strategist? No, I don't have a minimum, but we always start with a consultation, and then to move to retainer, I won't encourage you, or we won't agree to take you on as a retainer if we don't think it's a good investment of your money. So that's the one place it could come in. Anyway, next question. Dear Catherine, lobbying has a profound impact on our government here in the U.S. and a huge impact on special interest groups getting what they want. If you could enact any laws you wanted to and around lobbying, what law or laws would you enact that you believe would really serve the people? I don't think a lot of the, you know, lobbying is a symptom, not the problem. So I would be more focused on addressing the problem. Let me describe some of the things I would do. Place-based financial statements of government credit appropriation and contracts. The government contracting budgets and contracts would be way more public for both by agency and scope of work, and again integrated into the place-based financial disclosure. General accounting, I would have general accounting and CBO pro forma the benefits from pending or proposed legislation and regulatory changes well before anything gets voted on or finalized. And so the public can look at, you know, qui bono, who benefits from the various changes being proposed. I would have significantly expanded enforcement for any tortious interference or legal, financial, or physical violence towards any government, military, congressional, or judicial personnel, whether the appointees or staff or employees. I would do everything in that context to remove the ability to kill with impunity. Government officials, military personnel, congressional congressmen and senators and their staff, judges and their staff need the ability to say no or make the tough call without thinking that their lives, their families' lives, their children's lives are in danger. I would put limits on the duration of campaigns as well as how much media time could be eaten up by federal campaigns. And I would outlaw the use of entrainment technology and subliminal programming on an undisclosed basis, and I would enforce that. And finally, I would have significantly increased transparency around the issues of the black budget. And, you know, we need to end. That's Richard Dolan say we need disclosure now. Dear Catherine, during your interview with Joel Garvin, you mentioned that there are a number of underground bases and cities that already exist on Earth. Can you explain to us what you already know about the quantity, size, and location of these? We're doing an interview with Richard in the coming weeks, so you'll hear it then. But what he will refer to is Richard Satter's book. He also has an internet presentation that I've posted on our blog. If you just do a search for his name, you should pull it up, where he covers Satter's work and gives you some examples of different underground bases. And between that presentation and Richard's book, there's a lot of documentation of what at least is in the public, both documented in government documents or from very strong whistleblower testimony. There were two questions I was going to address in the first quarter equity overview, and I didn't, so let me do that now. One was, I got a question on what are the pros and cons of direct securities registration. First of all, regulatory and brokerage firm changes have made direct securities registration very, very difficult, if not impossible. Direct, for those who don't know, direct securities registration is rather than keep my securities at a brokerage firm and ultimately sort of in the digital clearance systems. In fact, I take delivery and keep a certificate in my safe deposit box or in some, please make sure it's fireproof place. And so I have, in a complete meltdown of the brokerage system, I have proof of what I own. I mean, here's the reality. I'm not a huge fan of direct securities registration. It's expensive. It's cumbersome to do. Yes, I can argue it's worthwhile doing if you are absolutely sure you're going to hold those securities for a decade or more, if they're the kind of securities you're never going to sell. But the advantage of securities is liquidity. And the reality is if the system truly breaks down to the point where you need direct securities registration, then in fact, I'm not sure having those securities is going to be worth anything anyway. We'll have much bigger problems. So I'm not a big fan because I've been in situations where people did take direct securities registration, and then it was a nightmare to find the securities, get them into the system, let alone do it quickly. And it was all situations where people, it never occurred to them that they would suddenly need liquidity. And sure enough, things happened and they did. Now I say that knowing all the criticisms of the system. So I think I'm pretty knowledgeable about the dangers of the system and the corruption of the system, but I do think the system is going to keep working. And I think if it makes tremendous sense for everybody to have non-liquid assets that are outside the securities or the banking system. And I constantly encourage you to have that kind of balance, but I would much rather you do that with real assets as opposed to securities. I think it's, you're trying to get a real asset benefit out of something that is, was created to produce liquidity, and the system will not serve you well if you can't get the benefit of what it's good at, trying to protect yourself from what it's bad at. The other question was what to do in a highly deflationary scenario. Could that happen? Yes, it could happen. And if you look at what's going on, the central banks are literally going to negative interest rates to try and continue to print and to avoid a highly deflationary scenario. There's a lot going on globally that is deflationary. If we hit a war, it could literally stand in the way of the inflating, and we could, in fact, turn into a highly deflationary scenario. I think it's going to take some pretty serious military problems for that to happen, but it could. If you look at the wrap-up, you notice I say 8% chance of a serious environmental disaster or war, and so figure 8% chance of a highly deflationary scenario. What do you want to do? You want to get out of debt, number one. Reduce your debt as much as possible. Two, reduce your overhead as much as possible. Learn how to do more for yourself. Hopefully you can generate an income. If you can't, learn how to do as much as possible for yourself and things that you can do for others in exchange of barter for things they could do for you. Have some cash savings, including outside of the system, and always keep fixed income. Make sure if you can, you're in a good local bank who can survive such a kind of scenario. And there are good local banks who absolutely can stand and maintain in that kind of situation. You always want something like income-producing stocks or real estate, even in a highly deflationary scenario. Anything that has an essential purpose that can produce an income is going to be something you want. One of the things that was mentioned was Harry Dent. I took a deep breath and watched another Harry Dent presentation. He's just not someone I recommend. I'm not a fan of annuities, and in a real negative interest rate environment, some of the insurance companies could get into some, well, they're already in serious problem because they've made all sorts of promises and they were assuming a certain interest earning and investment earning, and they're not going to get it. So I would much rather you keep control of your own money and live with the ups and downs and swings of the cycle and create an annuity for yourself. So I don't know. I would not spend a lot of time listening to Harry Dent. If you want to study deflation, one way to do it is to go back and read stories of the Great Depression, including of businesses that did well during the Great Depression, who succeeded and why. It's quite interesting, and what you learn is there are many strategies that work during a deflation. Our interview tonight, of course, is the first quarter equity overview, and I focus on a review of global valuations. The U.S. stock market has run up incredibly in the last 3 years. Now that it's this high, the question, of course, for many of us is, do we keep Do we stay in and keep following the trend, or is the divergence so great that it's bound to close up again between the U.S. market and Europe and the other developed markets, as well as the emerging markets? So we take a look at global valuations and then know where the opportunities are that we're keeping an eye on. I think there are a lot of different potential ones this year. The outlook for the U.S. dollar is very, very strong. So one of the things I keep trying to focus everyone on is the keep an eye on that dollar and how much more it might go up. In closing, let me just tell you, we've got a great lineup coming up in March. We have next week Precious Metals Market Report with Franklin Sanders. It's a lot to talk about in what's been happening. Precious Metals started out the year strong, but it's backed up and it's looking pretty weak. It broke the 1200 line today, or gold broke the 1200 line today. So let's see what it does this coming week. I've also asked Franklin to help me address the issue on the Constitutional Convention. I'm violently opposed to a Constitutional Convention and regularly encourage everyone to support their state legislatures in beating back any effort to do that. Several subscribers have questioned me on that, and I thought I would get Franklin to help me cover that issue and make sure that you have the best thinking that we have on that. March 19th, Richard Dolan, What's Up Underground. I've become convinced that what's been happening underground is a very significant investment and much more important to all the money that's disappearing than I had thought. Richard has published Richard Souter's work. He's the author who knows the most about what's going on underground, just spent years researching all these issues. We will cover that March 19th, What's Up Underground with Richard Dolan. And then March 26th, Dr. Joseph Farrell joins me for Planet Debt. Believe it or not, since the financial coup d'etat was over, $27 trillion of bailouts did not extinguish all the debt on the planet. The debt continues to grow. Of course, you had to finance those bailouts. It's one of the reasons the debt continues to grow. So we're going to be talking about that, where that goes, what that does, and what it means to Planet Equity. And so we'll be looking at a much bigger part of the balance sheet of the whole planet and engaging in a lot of high-octane speculation, because you can't discuss the debt or understand the debt without understanding what the governance system on the planet is and where that governance system wants to go. So that's it for March. Franklin Sanders, then Richard Dolan, then Dr. Joseph Farrell. So until March 12th with Franklin, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.